Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Happy Tuesday to you, everybody. Tick, tick, tick. Draft getting ever closer. Tony, there's no such thing as wearing out a corner of the end zone. They can use that over and over and over again. You're allowed to use that more than one, two, even four times. Love to see that. Somebody tweeted me, Tony Aguilini, as a matter of fact, tweeted me a picture, a screenshot of a game Maurice Jones-Drew had at UCLA where after his first four carries, he had 169 yards and three touchdowns. Could use that kind of an impact rusher in this year's draft, or maybe some internal improvement as well. We'll talk a lot about that today. Off-season conditioning workouts getting underway in full swing today. We hope to catch up with Luke Jokel on the program today, possibly Gus Bradley as well. Gus and Blake will have a press conference at 12:30, whether a joint press conference or one after the other, and just basically talk about coming in and starting, you know, year two of the Blake Bortles routine. And, you know, Gus has already been working on year three of the Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell regime here in Jacksonville, Tony. But we'll get right into the question of the day because it's something we'll talk about today. You know, a lot of potential areas of improvement, and people tend to focus on free agency a lot, right? What do we add? What are we going to get in the draft? Well, if you are following the plan that they're putting together, they drafted extremely young. They signed guys in free agency for the most part in the first couple of years who were young. Some of them got rewarded with contract extensions, but that's been the MO up until this point. And so you hope there's a lot of internal improvement on this football team. And obviously you want it to start at the quarterback position, but there are a lot of potential candidates to make a big step forward.
Yeah, there certainly are, and I know we've been focused in on the draft and what the Jaguars are going to be doing with that number three pick for the last month, month and a half or so, but with the offseason program getting started today, it felt like the right time to start talking a little bit about some of these guys that we may expect to take a step forward. You're right. The plan, unlike any team in the history of the NFL, was to go younger than any team that I can remember in the National Football League and put them all on the field at the same time. Maybe they didn't want Bortles on the field as early as he had to be out there last year because of the production of Chad Henning and what was going on with his offense, but in the end he played. You know, he played, started 12 games. He played in 13 games. I mean, he was in there for all of that time, and that can only help him going forward in the 2015, but he's clearly not the only guy. We've talked a lot about those young wide receivers, and it's why I still feel like when we have the conversation about the draft that it's going to be defensive end when everything is said and done, because a lot of the guys we're going to be talking about today that we're expecting to step up, that's on offense. It's a bunch of young guys on offense. And if the plan is we're going to be young on the offensive side of the ball and we're going to have all these pieces hopefully coming together at the same time, unless you feel like a guy like Amari Cooper is just a transcendent talent, and maybe they do, but unless you feel that way about that guy, I don't see that pick not being a defensive end because of all the young guys, second and third year guys on that offensive side of the ball that they're expecting within this building to take a step forward.
Barring a trade for the Jags moving down, if they have the same picks they have now going in the draft in the first three rounds, what's your best guess as of today at which specific positions they will fill in which order? Obviously, you're going to say defensive end in the first round.
Yeah. My guess today would be running back second round still, and then I could see linebacker in the third round, maybe linebacker, maybe another defensive end in the third round, honestly. And if I could see wide receiver in the third round too, but I think those first two picks I feel pretty good about being defensive end, running back.
To me, I'm thinking more running back third round. Because I just think there's so much quality depth in this year's running back class. Now, Dave Caldwell said there's a lot of depth, but there's also a lot of high-end guys as well, and you want difference makers. There's no question about that, but I just think with still the fact that there are a lot of needs on this football team, and that is such a deep position in this draft, that I think you can get a relatively comparable guy at the top of the third round. We saw the one mock draft, and it's a mock draft, but we saw the one mock draft that had the Jags taking Jay Ajayi at number two, or at 36 in the second round, and then not a single running back coming off the board before their pick in the third round, which maybe had Ajayi not been selected by them in that. And again, it's just a mock draft. Sure. You know, maybe he goes somewhere else in the second round. Regardless, give me the next best guy if I can get him around later, or maybe the third next best guy, because I think there are enough of those impact guys or potential impact running backs. I'm starting to think wide receiver in round two makes a lot of sense. And look, we're just guessing. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm with you. As of right now, I still think defensive end, and I'll lump Leonard Williams in as a defensive end, right? And it's probably not, it's not the same type of guy, right? But that kind of covers the bases. Defensive line, defensive end at that spot. There are a lot of intriguing wide receivers that I think could potentially be available at 36. And whereas you're right, unless you think Amari Cooper is that guy that is absolutely a kind of a top 10 lead the pack of receivers for the next 5 to 10 years, clearly pick, I think they go on the defensive side of the football. But I think you can get something pretty damn good at the 36th pick if you stay right there. So if I had to guess today, and that's all it is, DN, wide receiver, running back in that order.
Well, yeah, it's a guess, and I know we haven't talked a lot about it because it's so hard to predict, you know, what's going to happen outside of that third pick in the draft. Like, it's really hard to predict what's going to happen in the NFL draft, but the Jags are in a good position in the second round, too, not only with that 36th pick, but with a bunch of teams that if they didn't get a quarterback in the first round may have one guy that they are targeting in the second or third round or something like that that gives them a little bit more flexibility at the top of the second round if they do like more than one of those running backs. But that's a conversation we'll probably have that Friday after the draft when we see what exactly is happening.
So what are you saying? You're saying a team could trade up for a Bryce Petty because they missed out on the top two guys? Or somebody right at the top could take one?
There's the potential of that in the second round.
I'd be shocked.
There's the potential of that in the second round. And look, running back is one of those things where everyone talks about how deep the class is. I think the way NFL teams seem to work to me, it's more like, yeah, we like a bunch of these guys, but we really like that one.
Right.
And we don't want to let that one get away from us. And in covering the NFL, it feels like there's more teams that say, but that's our guy. There's a lot of guys we like, but that's our guy. And they'll do what they have to do to get what they consider to be their guy in that kind of position. If they feel like they need to move up three or four slots in a round, they will.
If they feel that need, and the Jags has clearly done that. They did it with Allen Robinson. They did it with Brandon Linder.
And it doesn't have to be Jacksonville. It can be another team that wants to get to where Jacksonville is. Again, there's the possibility of them getting out of that third spot, and I think there's a possibility of them getting out of that 36th spot, too, because of we've talked about there's about, what, 18 to 20 guys when you talk to the experts that are being given kind of that first-round grade.
And, right, depends on who
right.
you talk to
but,
and what
but
teams.
That group of 40, 45, this year there's that big group of the second-round grades. So if you're Jacksonville, do you feel pretty good if you're moving back down into the high 40s, mid-40s, if that's the kind of opportunity that you're given there in the second round? I would think you would, depending on how you evaluate all those
guys. I think the big wild card is, obviously, talk about free safety. If there's a guy that they feel can project as a long-term starter, at a top of the depth chart guy at free safety, whether you got to convert a cornerback or not. I had somebody email me yesterday, said, how come nobody's talking about free safety in the second round? I think, well, for a couple reasons. One,
who's the guy?
Right. There is no, it's supposedly a weak class at that position. And we have talked a little bit about certainly the prospect of taking a big corner and converting him. Look, we'll know everything coming up in 9 days, at least as far as the first round goes. And after about, a week and a half, we'll be all settled in, with the new draft class for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll see how that all plays out. Hopeful, as I said, to get Luke Jokel in studio today, possibly Gus Bradley as well. So stick around for that on Jaguars today. Speaking of impact running backs, noticed the blurb that got picked up from the St. Paul Pioneer Press that characterized the Jaguars as one of six teams, quote, in the mix for Adrian Peterson. Now,
what's in the mix?
What is in the mix? And is this just pure speculation based on salary cap space and the ability to take on that salary without blinking?
Right, and the need at running back.
Mike DiRocco wrote, I thought, a pretty well-detailed piece as to why you wouldn't go. And a lot of the stuff we've talked about with Adrian Peterson, but he did a nice job if you look at ESPN.com's NFL Nation and kind of going point by point on. You know, start with the fact that, yes, maybe Adrian Peterson is more highly regarded than DeMarco Murray, but DeMarco Murray has been healthier of late. He's considerably younger, with considerably less wear off the tires, right? And all these things, and the Jags wouldn't go north of $8 million a year for him, or wouldn't even match $8 million otherwise, other than in an incentive-based kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Adrian Peterson, as great as he is, the great ones eventually run out of gas, too. And he's 30, and you're talking about paying him $12.75 this year, and it goes up each of the next 2 years as well. So the likelihood of that, coupled with the fact that they'd have to give up a commodity or commodities in terms of draft picks,
yep.
And right now, it's just across the board silliness that's being speculated as to what it would take to get him. Some people say a first round pick and a starting corner. Others say that wouldn't be enough. John Clayton on the low end has said a fourth round pick, and I've seen just about everything in between because nobody really knows, Tony. Nobody knows what it would take for the Minnesota Vikings to give it up. You know, speaking of making trades, Tony Pauline, draftinsider.net. Go ahead.
If the price has anything to do with the first round pick, the Jaguars.
Oh, it's not.
They're sprinting away from that.
Of course. Now, look, if you say you could have Adrian Peterson for your fourth round pick.
Okay.
I would take that.
Yeah.
I really would. And I'd take that at that salary because you've got the cap space and you've got the chance over the next couple of years to have a 1,500-yard type rusher, highly motivated to prove that he's not done at that point in time. But I think we're talking fantasy land there. Tony Pauline at draftinsider.net had some scuttlebutt that he's heard. He's going to join us on the show tomorrow, as a matter of fact. But talking about the Marcus Mariota trade situation. Will there be a market for it? We'll get into that coming up. But we encourage you today to reply to the fan feedback spotlight either on the air or via Twitter or Facebook at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. We ask you today, which player on the Jags do you expect, not do you hope, but do you expect to take the biggest step forward in their play in 2015 based on the way they played last year? So share your thoughts with us on that. If you want to talk Jags in any capacity, 641-1010 is the way to do it. Tyler Devitt running the show back at 1010XL World Headquarters. I'm Mike Dempsey along with Fat Tony. We're live at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today here, live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Expected to catch up with Luke Jokel, hopefully Gus Bradley for a few minutes today as well. Gus and Blake Bortles press conferences at 12:30. Of course, the schedule unveiled tonight. You know, it'll be fun to talk about tomorrow, but in the end, we know who they're going to play. Fortunato already tells us he knows exactly when they're going to play. All those things. Still stuck on five entries in the Fortunato predict the schedule contest. A little disappointing, I gotta believe, for Big Joe. That's the way it goes in the life in the big city. Tony, I've got a few tidbits from the Scuttlebutt rumor mill.
Yes.
Tony Pauline, draftinsider.net, talking about what he's been hearing. He will join us on the show tomorrow. As a matter of fact, one of the last guys we'll have on before we actually get this thing rolling a week from tomorrow. Media mock draft number 11, I believe, is what it is. The 11th year we've done that. We will have correspondents who match up, I was going to say correspond, with the first 16 picks in the draft. That would have been crazy. And they will play it out in real time. The Bucs will take who they take, which will presumably be Jameis Winston. They better not take anybody else. After that, it's fair game. Tennessee wants to go Mariota, if they want to go Leonard Williams, if they want to go Dante Fowler. I could see all those scenarios.
Right.
Don't see too many scenarios where if the Bucs stay there, they don't take Winston. Although they are said to be listening with great interest. Hey, why wouldn't you listen, right?
Sure.
See if somebody blows you away. I don't know. Never say never, right? Because someone at some point will make another RG3 type trade. It may not be for 10 years, may not be for 20 years, but it will happen. So never say never, but you can't expect that kind of haul. But if you were to get three first round picks and a second round pick,
that'd be nice.
I think the Bucks would take that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think the Bucks would say, you know what? We can ride Mike Glennon here and look for another route because, there's enough trepidation. Now, and who knows with the Bucks in that scenario. Let's say a team did that. Let's say the Raiders did it. Raiders wouldn't do it. Let's say the Redskins did it and came up from five. Or the Jets did it. That may be even a little bit more plausible. There's a tiny outside chance that Mariota would fall to the Bucks at six, which would be the ideal situation. We're talking fantasy land. But in terms of Mariota, here's what Tony Pauline said. Said, expect to talk of teams wanting to trade up for Mariota to pick up an intensity in the coming week. From all accounts, he's hearing the Cleveland Browns are the front runners and working the hardest. He said early last week he was told the asking price from the Titans was both of the Browns' first-round picks, 12 and 19, as well as their second-round selection. Cleveland said no, and he goes on to say, understandably, Tennessee would have a high asking price. You ask for the moon right now. You have to make the deal now. If they're willing to give you exactly what you want, then if you say, you know what, maybe they would settle for two first-round picks. Maybe they wouldn't, but they know right now they can ask for more because, you know, there's no harm in asking. And if you're the Browns, you're like, well, you may, even if we'd be willing to pay that, let's put the pressure on them maybe and see if they'll bring that down a little bit. Do you think if you were put yourself in Dave Caldwell's shoes, not what you would do. What do you think Dave Caldwell would do? Let's say that the Titans did draft Leonard Williams and Cleveland offered you 12 and 19.
Yes.
You think he'd do it?
I'd do it.
Do you think he would do it?
Yes.
I'm not 100% convinced he would. I think he'd want
I'm not 100%, but I'm better than 50-50 that he would.
Are you?
Yeah.
Pretty much on the fence on that. I would say it would take more to get Dave Caldwell, even like a third rounder next year, something like that. I know he has told us directly, if you're talking about trading outside the top 10, you're going to start with two first round picks. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be pretty steep. That doesn't mean that, you know, 12 is not that far out. We don't know how many elite players you think are in this, this class, but you know, you're probably moving outside of that range, where you can comfortably count on one of the top half dozen pass rushers being available to you, right? And it depends on how you feel about Randy Gregory, if you'd even take him with the 12th pick in the draft, based on, you know, not only the failed drug test, but the admission that he smoked marijuana habitually,
yep.
Had a tough time not smoking it every day he woke up at Nebraska, which was one of the dumbest things he could have said, and, you know, rumors of some, you know, just that there's more issues with Randy Gregory. I don't know what those are, but that's about basically what's been put out
if
there.
If the rumors are out there, then NFL teams probably know.
Oh, then again, NFL teams could be starting rumors.
Well,
Randy Gregory, you know, you just don't know how that goes. Man, wouldn't you like to be the team in the catbird seat right now? You know, fielding all these offers, because in the end, if you don't get what you like, you sit there and you still take the best position player in the draft. They're your favorite guy, and which is probably the situation I think the Jags will find themselves in. I still think somebody will make a move for Mariota. Who knows? Maybe Tennessee won't get what they want. And then there's a chance that nobody will make that offer to Jacksonville because they're going to say, well, the Jags are not going to take him. They're not going to take the quarterback.
Right.
The Raiders are not going to take the quarterback likely, right? Maybe Washington will. They could.
Yeah.
They could. But I gotta believe Derek Carr showed him enough in his first year that that's not even an entertaining possibility in their mind right now. I think they would pass. I don't think they would take
I think
the
quarterback. They would probably pass. I think a lot of people are talking a lot more positively about David Carr,
Derek,
than what he actually did on the field. I mean, 5 yards an attempt? I mean, come on. Come on! Of course he's not going to throw interceptions if he's throwing for 5 yards an attempt.
No guarantee that Mariota's going to be any better, though.
You know what I mean? I understand that, but there's a reason that he fell to the second round last year, and if you're in a position to get a guy that you feel like is the franchise.
If you feel that way.
Right.
That's
if you're the Oakland Raiders, there is that chance that they would be a team that could draft
a quarterback. I think it's a risk some teams might be willing to let slide. And they might say, look, I think a very likely team is the Jets. Not even a guarantee with them that they take him, right? They might say, hey, we're going to address and build something else.
Right. The Jets are so interesting because it's New York. And there's this idea that I'm not sure how Jameis Winston would handle New York and the scrutiny that he'd be put under and all that pressure. And I'm not sure how a personality like Marcus Mariota would handle New York in that media either. It's like both of these top quarterback prospects, I'm not sure how much they fit into the culture of what you get thrown into when you get put in a place like New York.
I think Winston would love it at first, right? Because I think he's an attention hog, right? I mean, I think he lives off of that to some degree. We've talked about that on the show and off the air with our various co-hosts, that you look at how he conducted himself at his pro day. Like, we know the teams know who the receivers are. You don't need to get up there and introduce each one. You're just inserting yourself into the story.
Sure.
Once again, I thought he, you know, during the Clemson game when he was suspended for the game, I thought it was pretty evident he knew exactly where the camera was at all times and was putting on a show on the sidelines for the camera. That's the way I interpret it. I'm a Florida State fan, and that's the way I interpret it. So what have you? I mean, does that mean he'd do better, or would they eat him alive because they wouldn't let, you know, any slip-ups or indiscretions go? It's tough to say.
It's really hard to say. And was it Peter King that was talking about it yesterday, the idea of that trade with Phillip Rivers and Tennessee and all that that's been talked about here for the last month or so? And one of the reasons it makes sense is for a guy like Marcus Mariota, that he would fit into the culture.
Rob Rang told me that.
Right, of out there. It was Rang that
it
told
was Rang,
you that.
Yeah.
But the culture out there would be something that fits Marcus Mariota.
There's a big
Mariota.
Polynesian community,
right,
according to Rang. I've never been to San Diego. I couldn't tell you a thing about San Diego. But Rang's a West Coast guy, said he's scouted him firsthand several times, seen every one of his games in college, and has talked to people that reportedly know him. I don't know. You know, maybe Rang's wrong. You know, maybe he'd fit in just fine. Maybe he's just a low-key guy, doesn't have to go around. You know, Teddy Bridgewater's a low-key guy. Right now he went to Minnesota. Minnesota's not New York, but doesn't mean you have to be eaten alive. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to have that, I don't know what kind of personality you would say is the alpha dog. You don't have to have a Phillip Rivers personality, for instance, who seems to enjoy a little bit of that confrontational stuff. By the way, see LT, LaDainian Tomlinson's comments?
Yeah.
He thinks Rivers wants out.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he is just piggybacking off of the stories that have been written, or if he's actually talked to Phillip Rivers, obviously longtime teammates in San Diego.
Sure, I can tell you, I remember when the LeSean McCoy trade happened, right, when he went from Philadelphia to Buffalo, and NFL Network had LaDainian Tomlinson on the phone, and apparently he had talked to LeSean McCoy a couple weeks before that whole running back community thing, and LT, I imagine, is pretty well connected with all of those guys, with what he accomplished in his career and what he's doing now. But he said that he had talked to LeSean McCoy a few weeks before that, and LeSean had basically told him, no, I'm not going to be in Philadelphia. I don't think I'm going to be in Philadelphia this year. And he didn't know where it was going to be, but that there was the sense from LeSean McCoy that he was getting out of there. Now, he didn't share any of that on air during that time in between, but it makes me think that there probably has been a conversation between LaDainian Tomlinson and Phillip Rivers, and Phillip is saying privately what he's been saying publicly. He does not want to go to L.A.
You know, LT's flown under the radar a little bit because his first real media gig was on Sirius XM Fantasy. All right, same channel that I'm on. He did a show two seasons ago, a weekly show.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, he was not afraid whatsoever to bruise egos. You know, I was actually very impressed that he was able to speak as frankly as he did, and I think he's continuing that. And I don't know what's holding him back from maybe a bigger stage at some point, but I think that's coming for LaDainian Tomlinson at some point in time when it comes to being an NFL analyst. Well, one more nugget from Tony Pauline, in addition to thinking that Cleveland right now is the team that's most aggressively pursuing a trade-up for Marcus Mariota. This Jay Ajayi stuff, I don't know if you follow the draft whispers closely, you may have heard this. He said he's been a big proponent of Ajayi out of Boise State, and he likes his entire all-around game. A lot of people think he's the clear-cut number three. Some people like him even more than Melvin Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that. I mean, that's, you know, personal taste, what have you. And he says, that said, last week he was informed that a number of teams red-flagged Ajayi over a knee injury he sustained early in his college career. This happened back in 2011. You'll see he plays with a knee brace on his right knee, or like a wrap. But he also wasn't asked to show up for the medical recheck this past weekend. You know, if you red flagged him at the combine, let's say,
right,
wouldn't you necessarily have him checked out again? Now, I wonder if that's the case, because if it's something like an ACL, like Todd Gurley has, and it's in a healing process, you want to see where it is as close as possible to the actual draft. But if it's something,
sure,
with Ajayi, that maybe it's a chronic thing, and you're not gonna, and you know what to expect, and it's like nothing's going to change in the next month. This is more like 3 years down the line. Are we going to be in trouble on this? I don't know. I'm just, you know, it could, and it could just be teams throwing it out there like, hey, we really like this guy. Boy, that knee is worrisome, right? I mean, it happens. So nobody really knows until somebody pulls the trigger on one of these guys. But you would think, based on everything you've heard, wouldn't it be a surprise for Jay Ajayi to get out of the second round, maybe even the top half of the second round?
Yeah, right now. That'd probably be a surprise.
So maybe there's, you know, if he falls, maybe there's something to it. Maybe there's not. Maybe other teams will look at it the way we talked about at the top of the show, that this is an exceptionally deep year for running backs. So we'll see how it all plays out. All right, if you'd like to get in, 641-1010 is the number. I hope to catch up with Luke Jokel in studio before the show's out. Likewise, Gus Bradley, head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars. In the meantime, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we continue along in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Jaguars today, live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. I always lose track of the running tally, Tony. The countries we've checked off the list.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've had calls from Australia, Ireland, England. I want to say we had, like, Germany or Austria, too.
Slovenia.
Somewhere in there. Slovenia, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Good call there. By Tyler Devitt. I don't know if we've had Canada or not. It seems like we may have, but trying to remember if this is the first time Cristiano, our Pro Bowl correspondent, has called us from Rio de Janeiro or not. Cristiano, if it's not, I apologize. It's my faulty memory, not the impact you made on the program. How you doing there, south of the border, or south of the equator, I guess, as the case would be?
Hello, Mike. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. What's up, man? How are you in Brazil?
Hey, Tony.
Hey, what's going on, Cristiano?
What's up, man?
All good.
All good?
National
all
holiday.
Right.
It's a national holiday here in Brazil, so I could listen to the show live, what I usually don't do because of work and stuff. So I took the opportunity to call you today.
Well, thank you. It's not a national holiday because the NFL schedule's coming out, is it?
could be. Not yet.
What's the holiday? What's the holiday?
It's from a independence martyr we had in 18th century or something.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, you're asking me. You know more. All right. We'll take your word for it. Let's not waste your time. So what's on your mind, Jaguar related?
I would like to thank you guys because being down here, my source of information for Jaguars stuff is Jaguars.com and you guys and Jaguars Twitter. So I love the Jaguars. I'm a Jaguars fan since the Morten Andersen's missed field goal. So from there to now, I have learned so much from guys at Jaguars.com and Johnny O and even his predecessor. And then I found Jaguars Twitter. I entered Twitter because of 2012 free agency. I was not on Twitter until then. And so I found a country and then Boat City Brigade. I'm a Boat City Brigade member.
Good for you, man.
So I would like to you guys know so much about the NFL and the Jaguars.
Hey, Cristiano, listen, we got to run here in a second because we got a special guest in studio. Why don't you say hi to Gus Bradley for us?
Oh,
Cristiano, what's up, man?
Hello, Coach Gus.
How you doing? Where are you calling from?
I'm from Rio de Janeiro.
Rio de Janeiro.
How about that, man? That is great.
I can see the statue of Christ the Redeemer from my window.
How about that?
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
I imagine
the Jaguar cheerleader pictures from outside my window.
And the difference is you know them all by name.
Hey, Cristiano, we got to run, man, but we think it's awesome that you're that active, you know, following the Jags, all the Bold City Brigade stuff, the Jaguar Twitter. And as we've told you, if they do put the Pro Bowl in Brazil, you're our official Jaguars Today Pro Bowl correspondent, okay?
I'm counting on that.
All right, buddy. Thank you, man. We appreciate the call. How
Thank
about
you
that,
guys.
Gus?
Yeah.
That's not bad, right?
Yeah. You're talking about connect with the following all the way down to Rio.
Hey, we got to reach out, man. We've had Australia, Europe, South America, obviously North America. I don't think we're getting any calls from Ice Station Zero down in Antarctica.
Not yet.
Got a couple more to go, and we'll have the world covered. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What an exciting time, huh? See the players come in the building again, and just had a little team meeting, and it's amazing. You know, we challenge these guys to have the best off season, and boy, I'm really pleased with how they've come back. Now we'll get more results from Milo and those guys, but you know, just when you see them in person, it's great to see them all.
Are they allowed to get the playbook now?
Well, we'll have our first meetings. Right now we have individual meetings.
Okay.
You know, like point of attack tapes, you know, or get better tapes, areas that we thought they did well and then areas that they can improve on. And then it will stem into a conversation of how they see themselves, their role, you know, maybe a little deeper conversation, because I think it's important for our coaches to learn the learner. And we take these first couple of days to really learn about our players and find out new things about them.
All right, tell us about Stefan Wisniewski, your newest player, and did you think you had a pretty good chance? Obviously, visited with a number of teams. You had to think Greg Olsen had a pretty significant influence on making that happen.
Well, you know what? He had a great meeting when he came in, and I was really pleased with how his meeting went and just his mindset and the veteran presence he brings. He's played some games now, and he knows what it's all about. And I think that maturity that he brings into that group will be needed. So I had my fingers crossed. You know, once that he kind of leaves the building, you know, then, you know, Dave and Tim Walsh and John Isaac, they get their hands on it. And we're just fortunate that it worked out.
You're adding Stefan, obviously. Earlier in the offseason, you added Jeremy Parnell. How do you feel about where you are on the offensive line right now?
Well, I think, you know, that's what I said to our staff. You know, through this offseason with the free agents that we picked up, we really liked our core group of guys in the locker room, really liked them. And we felt, you know, tremendous upside. And then, you know, to bring guys that will help in this process, to kind of take it to another level, it was important. But what's unique about free agency is a lot of times, you know, especially these first group of free agents, you know, you don't get a chance to meet them. You know, you can't phone call them. It's not like college where you go visit them and get a feel for what they're like. They kind of sign on the dotted line, and then you meet them. But really pleased with the group of guys that we brought in. And I think those additions in the offensive line, it just helps us. It brings competition. It brings, you know, guys that we felt like will bring added depth and will make our other guys even stronger.
How do you see Wisniewski fitting in right now? Are he and Luke competing for a spot? Is he going to try to push Beatles? Is kind of three guys for two spots right now? How do you look
well,
at it?
You know what? We feel like it's, you know, the thing with these guys is, that's what I love about our team. They just feel like this is great. Anybody that can help, you know, us get better. Now, you know, he won't be able to practice for some time, but, you know, and he's here. It's voluntary, and he came in and wanted to be here to go through this, even though he can't practice. So we'll see how it all plays out. Our central theme is competition. So I think guys are fully aware of that, and then we'll just try to position guys how we see best helps our team.
What do you expect from Luke Jokel in year three with a healthy offseason to get ready?
Well, I really like how he competed now. I mean, he's put on some weight. He just has more mass to him. And I think for him to go through a whole year, he kind of figuring out now what he needs to do to be successful. And his mind, you know, and just talking to him the short time I did today and visiting with him, he's on the right page. He really, I think, wants this year to be a good year for him.
I know you're getting the guys back in the building today, the off-season program getting started with the conditioning and everything. How crucial is that first offseason, this first chance for a lot of these young guys to step back and relax? How crucial is that first offseason getting ready for that second year in the NFL?
Well, it's very critical. You know, I think a couple of years ago, it was the strike or the, you know, the time when we couldn't work with the players, the holdout. You know, what a tough time to be a rookie then. They say the most dangerous things are time and money. You know, or it probably should be idle time and money. And that's tough, you know, because now they're going from January all the way through the summer months. And, you know, that's really hard. Fortunately, we get them in here now. So, you know, we'll get them out of that time and get their routine even more structured. And just talking to our guys like Telvin, I think they did a pretty good job trying to structure, but for them, it's their first time going through it. So a lot of questions. They ask a lot of veterans questions, trying to figure out a routine for themselves.
I would like to take a crack at that idle time and money thing and see for myself how that whole thing plays out. I'm going to ask you this delicately because we understand the tampering rules and the fact, you know, there are all kinds of stories that get written about teams' interest in other players and what have you. Would the Jags be at all interested in acquiring, say, a Pro Bowl running back via trade at any point?
I'm not going there.
All right.
Man.
All right. You see, do you sometimes, put it this way, do you sometimes look at stories and go, where do they get this stuff? It's that or I'm not talking specifically to that, you know, just in general.
You know what? It's hard, but I don't really get a chance to look at those stories. And, you know, you count on
just
guys
goes
like,
right past.
Yeah, Ryan Robinson to bring it up if there's something that I need to know. But, I mean, literally, I mean, from 5 o'clock this morning till now is the first time I sat down. You know, I haven't even sat at my desk. So to get a chance to kind of get caught up on things, you know, we've got so many other things that are more pressing to look up at the, you know, the wire and see what's going on. I just trust the guys around me will inform me. But, so some of the things you're talking about, I'm not.
All right. Well, where are you at with, Greg Jennings? Obviously you had him in for a visit. Is it, a kind of a case where let's see how the draft shakes out after that? Let's take a look. Let's see if he's interested. Let's see what his options are.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Greg, you know, when he came in here. He did a great job. I mean, really a proven player in the NFL. You know, 60-some touchdowns and, what, over 8,500 yards. So, you know, he's had a great career. And so, you know, I think we're just in the evaluation phase, brought him in, and really enjoyed the visit.
What about you, Coach? I mean, we talk about these players and the transition from season to season, but you're going into your third year as a head coach in the NFL. What do you feel like the learning curve has been like for you going through those first 2 years and now into the third?
It's been great. You know, I think we're all, you know, challenged, and, you know, it's like the players. We challenge them to get better, and I know us as coaches, we're challenged to get better, and that's a good thing. So I think that we've really grown through these years. I know just in the free agent visits, you know, maybe our first year guys would say, Gus, you know, we understand, we hear from players, your culture's good. What is your culture? And it's like, oh, let me think about this. Well, we have a good locker room. We have a good, you know, the players play hard. They enjoy it. And, you know, you kind of think about it where now it's like, well, yeah, here's our culture. We have a genuine appreciation. We have humility. We're servant leaders. We always compete. We keep the main thing. That's our culture. It's like, oh, that feels stronger. Well, it's more defined because we're at this process longer now. So I think that is an example of growth that's taken place. I think we're even more strongly convicted on our beliefs and what we're becoming as a team. And I think the players feel that, the coaches feel that, and it just makes you that much stronger.
Where are you guys, as we talk here with Jaguar head coach Gus Bradley, in terms of draft prep, are you ready to go? If the draft were tonight, would you be ready to go?
No, we never got it. You know, so, you know, the meetings, Dave and the staff, the scouting staff, man, an incredible job of putting this together. And I'm always amazed, you know, we have meetings with the offense, the defense, the scouts, and to go through and checking every player off and a reevaluation, and, you know, let's take another look at these three guys. And, you know, it's just an unbelievable thorough process. And so, no, we're not ready right now, you know, but it doesn't
need to be.
That's
yeah.
Right.
I know you just went through that list of, you know, this is who we are, this is our culture in this building and in this locker room. Going into phase one now, do you have a theme for phase one? What's
well,
right
you
now?
Know, what I talked to the team about this, you know, we have no limits. You know, we have no limits. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe what's accepted there, you know, we don't accept. And, you know, I think it's our opportunity now to take another step in this process that we have. We have a vision. It's clearly laid out. And now we're, you know, we need to take that next step as a team. And the cool thing about our philosophy is it stays the same. And as we get better and better with players, I think they come to appreciate that they know when they walk in this building what they're getting each and every day.
Tony, I talked with Dave Caldwell shortly after the initial half dozen guys signed with you guys in free agency, and he said the thing he liked right now is you didn't feel the pressing need at any one particular area. Not that you can't improve in spots, but he felt like you're going to go into the draft and say, we really could take more of a best player available approach than the first 2 years you've been here, because we could line up and play today if we needed to. Do you feel that?
Yeah,
way?
Dave and I have had that conversation, and with our staff, it's, you know, our first year here, we were, you know, guys that we were drafting were coming in and starting, you know, from day one. So I think that, you know, like I said, they've done a great job with the roster to make it even more and more competitive. You try, you know, the first year, 2 years, you know, the from the 25th spot to the 53rd spot, you're really competing in those areas, picking guys up off the waiver wire and improving that part of the roster. And the draft is where you get a chance to improve the upper part of the roster. And, you know, we've been having a good couple drafts. This year is real critical for that.
I know young guys, it's a very, very young team. You're out there every week, every day with these guys. Watching them, I imagine there comes a point in the NFL where you get it. Right, where it comes together for you, and there has to have been a lot of those moments over the last couple of years for you as a coach.
Sure. You know what, I think you're right. Our whole objective is to have a team on the field that plays fast, and you know, fast and physical. If you look at the great defenses around the league, that's what they portray, and that's what we're building here. And we're getting faster as a defensive unit, and with that, you know, understanding what your responsibilities are, it gives you the ability to play physical as well. Offensively, we got a new staff, you know, new coordinator on offense. So, once again, we're on that race again. But, boy, just sitting in on those meetings, the offensive meetings, it's clearly a system. And I think the players will really appreciate that. And, you know, we got to challenge our guys. We got to get them out of the comfort level and, you know, challenge our guys that way. Because once you're out of your comfort level and you've accomplished some things, I think it breeds confidence. And that's what the players are going to go through the next couple weeks.
All right, we'll wrap up with this. So Tony and I are talking today in part about which player do you expect to make a big jump from last year to this year. And certainly the quarterback position is the most critical. What areas do you look for the most improvement in Blake Bortles?
Well, you know, I think with Blake specifically, you know, what he went through last year and getting a feel for things, it gave him the ability to really identify his weaknesses. And what I appreciate about Blake is now in this offseason, he attacked those weaknesses. And I know in conversations with him, he's got a really good mind right now.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this state in football history brought to you by the best fence company of Jacksonville. I know from now on, Cristiano's going to think this state in football history, I called in and Gus Bradley was there. How about that? Nicely done, nicely timed out by the head coach to stop by. This state in football history, Tony, I'll start with the old school stuff. First, 1944, remember the Steagles, right? The Pittsburgh Steelers and the Philadelphia Eagles joined forces in 1943 due to the war when their rosters were depleted, and they played as the Steagles for a year. Well, the Chicago Cardinals and the Steelers merged in the next season, 1944. Do you know what the team was called in 1944?
The Pirates.
How about Card Pit?
That's awful.
Card Pit went 0-10 that year.
Card Pit, they
dissolved
deserved it.
On December 3rd, 1944. Card Pit. This date in football history, thank you, Jags, for tweeting this out moments ago. 1995, the Jaguars make the first trade in team history and acquire Mark Brunell from the Green Bay Packers. Tony, you remember what they gave up to get Mark Brunell?
Because I looked it up, a third and a fifth.
Third and a fifth, good man. You should have just went with it. And I wouldn't have blown you up much. Third and a fifth, three-time Pro Bowler Mark Brunell. Great day in Jaguar history there. Birthdays today, Tony Romo turns 35, born on this date in 1980. Two guys born on the same day, former Jaguar Khalif Barnes, who's not a fan of local law enforcement.
Nope.
But has made himself a long career in the National Football League.
Certainly has.
Cadillac Williams, likewise born on the same date in 1982. By the way, Cadillac Williams, one of three running backs, talk about how times have changed, that went in the top five of the draft that year. Who you got, Tony? Who are the other two?
Ronnie Brown,
yes, his Auburn teammate,
and Cedric Benson.
Cedric Benson, nicely done, sir. In fact, if you go back to the 2005 draft, that was the Alex Smith draft. Terrible, when you consider they could have had Aaron Rodgers and the way that turned out. Ronnie Brown went two. Braylon Edwards went three. He had the one season where he caught 17 touchdowns.
Yep.
That was Pac-Man Jones at six. Troy Williamson at seven. Oh, my goodness. Big Mike Williams went 10th. maybe everybody should have taken DeMarcus Ware, who went 11th to the Dallas Cowboys.
That one stinks.
A little bit later on. Some other highlights, obviously Aaron Rodgers, Roddy White in the first round, Logan Mankins, the final pick of round one that year, and one final birthday on this date in 1986. Happy birthday, Dan Scuda of your Jacksonville Jaguars, 29 years young on this day. This is This Date in Football History, brought to you by the best fence company of Jacksonville, fabricating and installing the highest quality fencing products for you while providing unsurpassed customer service. Get a professional free estimate at your convenience at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That was This Date in Football History.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown apparently is not happy with his current contract. The Steelers signed Brown to a five-year extension in 2012 for $42.5 million, and shortly after that, let Mike Wallace walk, clearly choosing Brown over Wallace for the long term for the team. Brown still has 3 years remaining on that extension and is scheduled to make $6 million this year, $8.25 million next season, and $8.7 million in 2017. He is the 13th highest paid receiver in the league as of right now. Brown did not report for the beginning of the Steelers offseason program this week. In case you're wondering, the last 2 years, Brown led the NFL in receptions and yards last season. He was second in receptions and yards in 2013 and has caught a combined 21 touchdowns in the last 2 years.
They kept the right guy.
Yeah.
And I think he deserves to be paid more than he's paid. Even 13th is not
right.
The worst. And
at the time, it was a fair contract. And,
absolutely.
And now the guy has outperformed that contract, or the Steelers going to pay.
That being said, if they, you know, I think the Steelers will pay him, but if they don't,
they hold their ground. I mean, they're paying the guy basically $8.5 million over the next couple of years. That's fair. He's probably deserving of more money than that, but from a Steeler perspective, it's fair. We had the same discussion with Maurice Jones-Drew a handful of years ago. There wasn't as much time left on that deal when Maurice got upset with it, but it was kind of the same thing. They decided they were going to extend Maurice, and he outperformed the contract that they had given Maurice Jones-Drew.
But they took a risk when they extended it.
Right. Right, and the Steelers did the same thing with Brown. Are they going to stay on their ground the same way that the Jags did with Maurice Jones-Drew? I get the sense that they probably won't. Also, safety Adrian Wilson is calling in career after bouncing around the last couple of years. Most recently in New England, Wilson spent 12 years as a strong safety with the Arizona Cardinals, which is where he signed a one-day contract to retire.
Hell of a player.
Yeah.
Adrian Wilson.
Five-time Pro Bowler, I think one-time All-Pro.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of safeties and contracts, Eric Weddle says he feels highly, highly disrespected because the Chargers have not given him a new deal yet. He's set to make $7.5 million in the last year of his current contract. And I would love to be highly, highly disrespected to that degree. Look, I get it. They're not just given the money.
No.
They earn.
But he's watching free safeties get paid in the league right now. He's the sixth highest paid safety. I'm not sure. I didn't look to see.
You know,
he's
watching
get
paid safeties. Free agent safeties.
Right.
Right? I mean, hey, you got a year. You know, maybe they'll work something out with you. Maybe they're trying to figure out what direction are we going with this team. Are we going to go and trade our franchise quarterback and try to hit the reset button and get a guy like Marcus Mariota in here? And then maybe it's a little bit more of a process to build back up. All right? And in that case, do we want to invest major millions of dollars on a, you know, $9 million on average, let's say? And Weddle's a hell of a player.
30 right? years old.
30 years old, Tony, and by the time the new money would kick in, he'd be 31 years old. So do you want to invest that in the free safety position? Oh, I personally think it's a pretty valuable position in today's NFL, but highly, highly disrespected at 7.5.
Earl Thomas is getting an average of $10 million a year. He's
a lot younger.
25 years old.
Yeah.
Devin McCourty just got an average of $9.5 million. He's 27 years old. Jarius Byrd at $9 million a year.
That was
that's not working
that
out
didn't
so
work
well.
Out so well.
$8.3 million a year for Eric Berry, and let's hope that he even gets to a point where he can
right.
play football.
You felt like the skills were going to have him live up to that, and then he got lymphoma, and we don't know if he's ever going to play football again.
And Deshaun Goldston, the other safety that's being paid more than Eric Weddle right now. Look, he's getting $8 million a year. That's not...
He deserves to be making more than a couple of those guys.
Right. And Earl Thomas and Devin McCourty and Eric Weddle, if you were going to make a list of the top free safeties in the league,
might
that's probably
the
guys that you're
right.
talking about.
And I would probably pay those other two guys more just simply because of the age factor.
Which is where they're at.
Right. And, you know, so maybe, but maybe he's saying, you know, it's not that the 7.5 is insulting. It's the fact that I'm in a walk year, basically. And
yeah.
we haven't gotten anything done on... as far as going forward.
There's a lot of moving pieces right now over there in San Diego.
Who knows? You think Gus is mad at me trying to slip that all-pro running back question?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Hey, hey. Look, I don't expect you to be able to comment. I mean, just hypothetically, would you like to acquire an all-pro running back via
trade? He laughed it off. He handled
it well. I hope so. I hope so. It does. I'm telling you, man. I swear I feel like I'm in the cult of Gus Bradley sometimes because he comes in and you're like, yeah, Gus is here. And it's like, you know, it's like the ice cream truck just came by. Oh, the ice cream truck. There's a Friday top five for you, right? Five best items coming out of that good humor man's box of delights. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Now I got me. Myself thinking
the bomb pop number one.
No, the bomb pop is a classic, but it's not the number one. You would choose the bomb pop over like the chocolate eclair?
Oh, it'd make my top five. I don't know about number one.
All right. Well, you just said number one. So
I changed my
mind. All right. Had you gone bomb pop and the push up? I mean, if you're just talking classic, the push up wasn't the best, but I'm very off track now. I get it. All right. I get it. But the push-up, Tony, you can't think of the good humor man without that little orange push-up thing.
No, I guess you can't.
Come on, I can't anyway. By the way, apparently the live stream went down right in the middle of Gus Bradley visiting with us today. Mm-hmm. So, sorry. And right. What you can do, though, is go later on today to 1010XL.com. And you can listen to the full show. I'm sure they'll also cut out the Gus Bradley portion of the program. They'll post that separately. You can go listen in the on-demand section at 1010XL.com. You can listen. You can download the podcast on Jaguars.com. And Tyler will probably tweet it out on SoundCloud as well, just for you guys out there. So we apologize if you had an issue listening to Gus in real time. But what he said will be preserved for all time.
Yep.
And it will be the most important interview probably ever done with Gus Bradley.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that Jacksonville, you have the only head coach in the National Football League that is saying hello to a fan in South America today.
I would think that's a pretty strong bet. Pretty strong bet as far as that one goes. All right, we'll take a timeout, come back. Still hopeful to get Luke Jokel before the show is done in about 35, 40 minutes or so. So stick around for that. 641-1010, phone lines open to you. Twitter lines are open as well. The Twitter lines at MD_1010X. So now I'm thinking like classic ice cream sandwiches. It deserves a spot.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a classic, Tony. You know, it really is such a classic. At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. And don't forget the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. This is Jaguars Today live from Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming up this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at the Jacksonville Fairgrounds, invite you to check out the Jacksonville Greek Festival presented by the St. John the Divine Greek Orthodox Church. You're going to have food. That's probably number one on my list right there. Music, entertainment, games, culture, just a great atmosphere. There's a great, really strong Greek community here in Jacksonville. It's going to be a lot of fun, and the prices are absolutely fantastic. $3 is the most you'll pay to get in. If you go between 11 and 1 on Thursday and Friday, you get in for free, military free with ID, kids under 12 absolutely free as well, and a portion of the proceeds from the Jacksonville Greek Festival 2015 will benefit the Wilson's Children's Hospital. You can't beat it. You can't beat the prices. You can't beat the atmosphere. Bring a designated driver and have your share of ouzo while you're at it as well. That's all happening at the fairgrounds this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You can go to jacksgreekfest.com for more information on that. We hope to see you out there later on this week. Of course, I was thinking about going out there right after the show on Friday. Then it dawned on me we've got to do the pre-draft luncheon on Friday, where we all scramble to get information and ultimately really don't come away with much of anything but a very nice meal provided by the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I will take them up on that. But on occasion, you get a nugget or two, and then really, there have been so few of them that they stand out over the years, you know, because, you know, what are they going to say? It's like, you know, as much as Gus can't comment on let's say, a player on another team in the NFL right now who happens to be a multi-time Pro Bowl running back, he wouldn't and shouldn't comment on any player they are specifically hoping is available to them in the first round, second round, what their plans would be, what the cost would be to trade up or down. Any of that stuff.
No, but off the air, he told us, I'm just kidding.
Right, he told us everything. We're embargoing the information. We can't pass that along to you.
I'm going to sound like a genius over the next week and a half.
Yes.
Let me tell you where I think the Jags might be leaning.
This is amazing how accurate Tony Smith is this year. You see this story coming out. Not that this is much of a surprise, but Paul Kaharsky is the NFL Nation reporter for the Tennessee Titans for ESPN. And said, according to his sources, Jameis Winston is definitely in play if the Bucs pass on him at number one and take Marcus Mariota. You think?
Shocker.
Shocker that he'd be in
I'm
play.
I'm surprised that Tennessee would consider Jameis Winston at two.
Well, even if they wouldn't, Tony. Right? Let's say they would. Let's say they were
because
scared
of the off-field stuff, they don't want to touch him.
They don't want to touch him.
Okay.
You put it out there that absolutely he's
you're
because I mean, otherwise, well, we know they're not going to take him. The Jags aren't going to take him. They have Blake Bortles. And it's the same thing with Mariota. Where do I need to trade up to?
That goes back to the mole Raiders. If Jameis Winston was sitting there for the Raiders.
That one strikes me as different. I feel that the Raiders will pass on Marcus Mariota if he's sitting there at four. Don't know if he will be. I still think he goes two in some scenario. I don't know which team will be the team
right. That
pulls the trigger. But, yeah, that seems a very Raider-esque type selection right there, doesn't it? I mean, honestly, now, as much as we don't put a whole lot of credence, if any, in the Jags being listed in the St. Paul Pioneer blurb yesterday that said the Jags are one of six teams, quote, in the mix for Adrian Peterson. We think it's just them looking at cap space, although Oakland was not mentioned as one of those teams. Tampa Bay has consistently been mentioned as a team, and I believe it's one that AP said he would consider playing for, would want to be traded to. They have $25 million in cap space. Can't remember who it was. I just came across the headline, didn't read the article, but I could understand the gist of it immediately. It said the Bucks should embrace just being the most hated team in the National Football League, and they should make the trade for Peterson and then draft Jameis Winston number one. And then you'd have Winston with Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson, AP in the backfield with Doug Martin backing him up, and Austin Seferian Jenkins at tight end. That would be quite a potential combo of offensive skill prowess right there.
No, it certainly would be. And I know you came in here yesterday talking about having thought about it over the weekend for the Jags and that possibility of Amari Cooper there at number three for Jacksonville becoming more and more realistic to you because, say, you draft Cooper and then you draft a running back, any of that combination, but it's looking at it as a whole and saying, now look at where we are on offense. And I think Tampa, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, if we get the opportunity, if we could trade for Adrian Peterson and we can take Jameis Winston number one overall in the draft, look at where we are at the skill positions on offense compared to where we were, say, just 2 years ago.
Less so that I think it's more realistic than it's more appealing to me. You know, just that idea that, and maybe, you know what, for all we know, they like Kevin White better. Right? Or they have Devontae Parker right there with those guys, and they're like, wow, we could trade back, you know, with Atlanta, say, and get them to the eighth spot and guarantee ourselves a guy of equal measure. We don't know. But the idea of having one more kind of alpha wide receiver, potential alpha wide receiver to go with Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, Allen Hurns, now you're four deep, feel pretty good about that group, and you got the tight end position covered. You beefed up the offensive line. You believe your quarterback's the right guy to lead the franchise. You can find a running back in round two or round three. All of a sudden, now, that doesn't mean you've addressed, you know, linebacker, defensive end. I mean, you can't have everything with every single pick, but the idea of not really having a discernible hole on offense is pretty appealing to me.
Had a caller call in last night on my show. And he was a Colts fan, and he talked about, you know, they drafted Peyton Manning, then they kept drafting offense after that because they wanted to feed their strength. And I hear that argument a lot. So I go back and I look at the Colts' first-round draft picks after they took Peyton Manning in the draft. And if you look at what the Indianapolis Colts did after they took Peyton Manning, and this is speaking to the people out there that are saying, you take Amari Cooper because you drafted a quarterback. You take Amari Cooper because you want to keep feeding that offense. If you go back and look at what the Colts did in the draft, especially the first round of the draft after they drafted Peyton Manning, it wasn't about filling up the offense. Did they draft Edgerrin James the next year? Yeah, because they felt like Edgerrin James was the best player available to them in the draft when they were drafting Edgerrin James. They also drafted Dwight Freeney and Bob Sanders and a bunch of guys on the defensive side of the ball. What the Colts did, and it worked for them for a long time so until they started missing on picks, was they took what they thought was the best player that was available to them. They didn't worry about whether it was offense or defense, whatever it was. They took the best player available to them, and because of the transcendent ability of Peyton Manning to carry guys, they became what they became. But it didn't feel like when you go back and look at their draft history that they said, we got Peyton Manning, we need to keep feeding these guys around him. It was more like when you look at their draft history, they got Peyton Manning, and because he was so good, it helped them in a lot of ways where they can go and just get the guy that they feel the best about. And I think the Jaguars, in the end, will take it the same way. When I say that, I feel like if they're going to take Cooper, it's because they feel like he is just a transcendent talent, right? He's the guy at the top of their board. That's why they take Cooper. And it doesn't matter if he plays wide receiver or defensive end. They're not taking a quarterback because they feel good about Blake. But I think when they evaluate every other player in this draft, if they take Cooper, it's because he's the guy they like the most in this draft. And it's not because they don't feel like they need to address defensive end. And if they take a defensive end, it's because they feel like that is a better player than Amari Cooper, not because they felt like they had to address defensive end instead of wide receiver.
Oh, yeah, I would hope that's the case, that in the position they're in. But if you really do grade them equally, or how much does it factor in, you know, we always talk about the need, positional scarcity.
Sure.
The bottom line, if the grades are the same, and I don't know if they're ever exactly the same. Somebody's got to be ahead of somebody else on the board. I don't know if they have ties on the board. There's got to be something that breaks that tie. You take the best guy, but if it's that razor thin, then I think there is some wiggle room when it's that tiny degree of margin. But keep in mind, they already had Marvin Harrison in place, right?
Yeah.
They did take James. They got Reggie Wayne in the first round. They got Dallas Clark in the first round.
They got Reggie Wayne at 30. I mean, that's right. A completely different position than what the Jaguars are in.
True.
I didn't go back and look at that whole draft to see what was available.
My point being, they plucked their starting core out of the first round. Their skill position guys that they surrounded Manning with. Joseph Addai was a first round pick after, you know, the James era later on. It wasn't like they were taking just wild shots in the third round and hoping to land a guy. They landed Reggie Wayne in the first round. They had Marvin Harrison. So they had those two guys. Then they could take some shots a little bit later on. They took Anthony Gonzalez in the second round when those guys were still rolling along very strong. Go back to Tom Coughlin. Doesn't always work out. The thought of drafting RJ Soward was that look at what the greatest show on turf was doing, right? You had Kurt Warner not only throwing to Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt, but you had Azakeem in the slot. It made him so devastating on top of that. Mm-hmm. And you had the great tailback, and the Jags had all those pieces but that slot guy, and they thought that R.J. Soward as the third piece could help them mimic that success on offense. Doesn't always work, obviously, but there is a school of thought that you do try to support your young quarterback and give him the best chance of success by giving him those kind of weapons. But you're right.
You take what's available to you, and if you feel like you found the answer at quarterback, do you want to keep surrounding him with weapons? Sure. And when you're in the position, and that's what the Colts did, when they were in a position to help Peyton Manning, they did. And when they were in a position where the best option available to him was Bob Sanders, they took Bob Sanders. They didn't force anything on the offensive side of the ball because of who was playing quarterback for him. And it was kind of the same deal with the Giants. They get that reputation as being the team that kept drafting, you know, defensive end after defensive end in the first round. Do you know how many defensive ends the Giants have taken in the last 10 years in the first round? Two. But that's the reputation they have. Did they keep adding strength to that position? Sure. But it wasn't every year they just took whatever the best defensive end was available to them in the draft.
No, but I think the feeling was at a time when they took Jason Pierre-Paul that they already had. It wasn't a position of weakness
right
at that point in time. You always got to project for the future as well. I remember, I forget who the corners were. One year Philadelphia had a couple of well-established corners and spent, I believe, their first two picks on the cornerback position because they're looking 2 years down the line. What's going to happen? Are we going to want to re-sign this guy?
Right.
It takes a little while for these guys to develop. It's a luxury, though, if you're in that position, right? Philadelphia, at that point in time, was going to NFC Championship games like it was going out of style.
Sure.
So when you're that competitive and you are picking at the end of the first round, it's like we talked about, Tony, with how many guys have first-round grades and second-round grades. Well, if a bunch of guys have second-round grades, the catbird seat is to be picking in the late 20s, or the early 30s, and trading out of that spot and really not dropping in value at all because some team near the top of the round in round two is desperate for improvement, and they feel like, I've got to get X at this position where we're just going to pluck the best available,
yeah,
and the talent pool is 20 deep. We can move back 15 spots and not sweat it and pick up a couple extra picks.
Yeah,
that's the place to get to.
Yeah, it's the luxury of having a franchise quarterback.
Let's get there.
Right, where all these other needs you have, yeah, you still, it's like, all right, let's keep addressing the problems that we have, the guys coming off the roster because we got free agents that our quarterbacks make them look really good, but we can't afford to keep them around for a while, so we'll go find somebody else that can play that position. It's that kind of position that the Patriots and the Colts and these teams have been in for the last decade or so. Look, they draft pretty well. They all miss. They all miss in the first round. Every one of them miss from time to time in the first round, but their quarterback play is so good that they can get through those misses. A team like Jacksonville hasn't had that really since Brunell, but Garrard had a couple years where he was really good, but they haven't had anything consistently at that quarterback position since 2002.
All right, a couple quick things. A caller said there's a speed trap at Atlantic and Kernan, as the officers of the law are saying, right outside BJ Liquors. I don't know if there's any connection or what have you, but be careful. I don't think they mind. The point is, slow down, right? If you slow down, yeah, they won't give you a ticket. So there you have it. Let's go to the phones, and we've got Will on the line. Wants to talk about the Jag wide receivers. Hi, Will. How are you?
How you guys doing today, man?
Good.
Love the show. Love the show. Hey, you guys are a little off a little bit on Bill Polian. I remember real well his thing was he was wanting to put weapons around Peyton Manning. That was his – he always said that after the draft back in those days, if you guys can remember. I'm a little older, so I don't know. But
no, I tend to agree with you more, but I'm not going to just – Tony did the numbers last night, so I'm assuming that was interspersed with guys like Freeney and Mathis, and who was the middle linebacker that they took too, that didn't pan out. That kind of started the string,
yeah,
of going down. Rob Morris,
yeah,
was that guy. Anyway, what's your point, Will? Go ahead.
Okay, but yeah, my thing was, as far as with the Jaguars, you guys are sound like you're kind of pushing Amari Cooper to the side, and I'm not saying it like you wouldn't want him enough. I'm saying you guys are kind of throwing him out of the window, saying that we have good wide receivers, and that's my problem. We don't have any good wide receivers. The Jaguar fans or the coaching staff or what have you, we have two young receivers that gave us sparks here and there. Let's go back a little bit. Ernest Wilford gave us that. Reggie Williams gave us that. Matt Jones gave us that. That don't mean we have a star wide receiver. The only star wide receiver that showed real potential as a star wide receiver has an alcoholic problem. That's the only one we saw that gave us any hope to say that's a good wide receiver. I haven't seen that out of Robinson. I've been to practices and I've been to games. I haven't seen that out of Lee at all. I've seen sparks. So for us to say if Amari has to be just the best player, no. I think, hey, if Amari's better than what we have, the receivers we have, he don't have to be the best player. We haven't shown that we have any playmakers on offense at all yet. I mean, you want to use
– all right, well let us jump in. Let us jump in because we're going to run out of time. I think you made your point. All right, a couple of things. A, I never said they won't draft Amari Cooper.
No.
I don't know how they're going to – I would still bet it's the defensive end. But that's all it is. It's a bet and a guess.
Right. I've come around on the idea of you don't avoid wide receiver at three if you're the Jaguars. It's more you evaluate the players, and if you feel like Amari Cooper's the best position player in the draft, you take
right.
him.
Right. I don't agree just because he's better. There may be five, six guys better than that they may grade better than Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee in this year's draft. Or maybe there's three, or maybe there's however many.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you take them if you grade you know, if you graded Leonard Williams to be a near J.J. Watt impact level player,
right,
and you graded Amari Cooper to, say, be a guy you expect to make a Pro Bowl or two over the course of his career, you take the guy who's got the all-time game-changing talent. I'm not saying that's how they grade him. I'm just saying that's how they should operate, and I think it's how they would operate. Look, I told you, top of the show, right now, if I had to guess, defensive end, wide receiver, running back, first three picks, right there. Clearly, I think they can add more to this wide receiver core.
Sure.
And the whole thing started when, Tony, we brought up the point that doesn't it seem more appealing now if you could get a Cooper or a White or whoever they feel is the top guy? Everyone focuses on Amari Cooper. That may not be their guy. You know, maybe it is. We don't know is
right.
the point.
I get the argument that Will was giving us there. I think you can make almost the exact same argument for defensive end on this team right now. Right?
Absolutely.
We've seen sparks from Andre Branch. We saw some sparks from Chris Clemens, but we have a difference maker at defensive end as a pass rusher on this team right now. You can make the same argument at that position. That's why, for me, it just comes down to you evaluate the players. I feel better about Leonard Williams and Dante Fowler than I do about Amari Cooper.
And don't think that positional scarcity doesn't factor in. Remember what Gus Bradley, or what I believe it was Dave Colwell said last year. He said, we felt, what if we take the wide receiver up the top? Clearly talking about a guy like Sammy Watkins.
Mm-hmm.
Then, are we going to get one of the quarterbacks we like? Will one last to us? Will we have to trade back up? We leave ourselves in a weak position. We took the quarterback we like, figuring it was deep at wide receiver. That was part of the evaluation. Now, they love Blake, okay? But they had hoped to get Allen Robinson with their pick. Then Marquise Lee fell. And they're like, wow, we got to take him. And we'll trade up and we'll get Allen Robinson on top of that. You may not have seen it. For all we know, Amari Cooper comes in and catches 650 yards worth of balls as a rookie. You just don't know.
No.
You could say, oh, I could guarantee. Well, maybe you're right, maybe you're not. Plenty of guys have come to the league and not made that kind of impact. By the way, here are the picks. Peyton Manning, they already had Marvin Harrison on the team,
yep.
right? They already had Tarik Glenn on the team. So Peyton Manning, first pick was Edgerrin James. Next pick was Rob Morris, who's a linebacker. These are first-round picks. Next year it was Reggie Wayne. Then it was Dwight Freeney. Then it was Dallas Clark. Then they didn't have a pick. Then they went Marlon Jackson. So they alternated offense, defense. And, yeah, you want to put the pieces in place, but they didn't get Peyton Manning and then immediately the next year go out and say, we got to find our other top wide receiver. They had Marvin Harrison. It was three more years before they drafted Reggie Wayne to be his complement.
Right.
I'm sure there were some other
and they nailed
first-round worthy
James.
Guys. They nailed Edgerrin James. They didn't nail Rob Morris. They nailed Reggie Wayne. They nailed Dwight Freeney. They nailed Dallas Clark. You know, Marlon Jackson, maybe not so much. Joe Adai was a good player. Anthony Gonzalez is actually a first-round pick. I said second. He was a first-round pick in 2007.
Wasn't Bob Sanders in the first round?
They started to no, Bob Sanders was a second or I want a second or third-round pick. He was not a first-round pick of theirs.
I thought Bob was in the first.
No, I'm looking at their first-round picks. It was remember
they didn't have
Bob Sanders
was
a small guy. Maybe that was a year in 2004.
Yeah.
Regardless, let's not get too off course here. Today, the question of the day asked you, which Jaguar do you think will make the biggest improvement in 2015 in his on-field play? We'll take a look at your responses. Coming back next, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Tony, we got to get to this or we're not going to get to this, if you know what I'm saying. Running short on time here on Jaguars Today. Tom Bush Family Dealership's Fan Feedback Spotlight asking Jaguar fans, what drives you? Well, we asked you today specifically, which Jaguar do you think will take the biggest step forward? Yes, it's a cliche. I fell victim to it in 140 characters or less, all right? Which one will make the biggest improvement in his on-field play from last year to this year? Tony, give us an idea of what kind of feedback we got, please.
From at Iris Jaguar Blake, please don't call an outright out route Bortles. From Tommy, wide receiver Allen Robinson. From Ortapalooza, production-wise, Allen Robinson, quality, consistency of play-wise, Blake Bortles. From Cristiano, who we said hello to, and he said hello to Gus earlier today. It better be Blake. In fact, I wouldn't mind no one else getting better if he did it significantly. I only half believe you, Cristiano. I think if everyone else was terrible and Blake was pretty good, that you'd be pretty upset.
So would everybody else.
Week 4 or 5. Ocho Fisho said, Brian Anger, this is the year he learns the coffin corner. Hashtag, we draft starters. From Chuck Phillips, we got Aaron Colvin. We need a shutdown corner badly. I think he could be that. From Ryan, Telvin Smith can only get better. From Cam, Jokel, Having a full offseason with Marrone should bring out his potential from Isaiah, hopefully Blake Bortles. If not, I'd say Marquise Lee. And from Black Dog Express, I expect the most visible improvement will be the B2 Bomber fueled up and fully loaded, ready to unleash hell. I think just the variety of answers that we got tells you how many really young guys they're counting on to take step forwards for this Jags team.
Yeah, I got just a sampling without getting into too many specifics here on Facebook. Marquise Lee, Blake Bortles, Jokel, Toby Gerhart as an improvement candidate, Allen Robinson, Storm Johnson, Clay Harbor, another Jokel, another Blake. So it's all across the board out there. Talvin's a guy, you know, not that we forget he's on the team, but not one of the first guys you mentioned necessarily.
He was really good.
Got a very high ceiling.
Yeah.
And he's just one of these guys, Tony, I think he's never going to put on 30 pounds. You know, he may put on a few. He's just going to be a smaller guy who is – there are exceptions to the rule in the National Football League, and I think
absolutely.
He may end up being one.
Yeah.
Plays at an unconventional size. And, you know, here's the – see this thing about Randy Gregory. You know, he was at 235 at the Combine, right? And – he said he had the flu, and that's why he was so low. Well, he went on one team visit, and he was like 232. And they're throwing red flags at that now. They throw red flags at everything at this point in time. But he's like, you know, I have no problem putting on weight. It's maintaining it. I'm just like, everything you say is the wrong thing, okay? Everything you say is the wrong thing. And he goes, I have no problem putting it on, losing it quick. Well, that's not what we're looking for here. We're looking for a sustained added mass to you and not lose any of your explosiveness or effectiveness. So he'll be one to watch certainly throughout the first round of the draft until he comes off the board. Two-round mock out by Daniel Jeremiah within the last 30 minutes or less. Top three picks, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. And he says, I think Mariota will get picked here. I'm not sure which team will be making the selection. And then with that, Dante Fowler Jr. It's funny, we had a tweet. Somebody said, well, let me see what it was. He said, SEC snobbery drives me crazy. This is from Wolfhound One. I grew up on the West Coast. We didn't beg for Pac-10 players nonstop. Hashtag best for the team. I suppose that was in response to the caller about Amari Cooper, right? Well, the guy you're probably arguing against in many scenarios is another SEC guy. It's Dante Fowler. The SEC happens to have a lot of good players. I don't get the sense of people are saying Amari Cooper played in the SEC. No, he played in the SEC. He dominated, got a high level of college football, and a lot of people think he's the best receiver in the draft, and a lot of people think the Jags need a receiver. It's not like they're taking, you know, Chris Connolly out of Georgia, right, who had a terrific combine. Oh, my goodness, we got to have Chris Connolly in the second round or whatever. You know, Amari Cooper's legitimately ranked by every pundit out there in that range where if he came off third off the board, nobody should be stunned.
Sure. If you want to get sick of SEC snobbery, I get it. Right. I can understand why it would drive you nuts if you're not an SEC fan. I don't get the sense that Dante Fowler or Amari Cooper, the talk here in Jacksonville, is because necessarily they played in the SEC. It may be that way for some of the people that
maybe,
are cheering
but,
that
but
on.
I think there's enough legitimate yeah. arguing for it.
But I didn't get that sense from Will, for sure.
No. I think there's plenty of SEC snobbery that we've recognized over the years. Some of it fitting, some of it way over the top. Some of it fitting simply because it is a high level of football. Look at the rosters in the NFL. Every year, there are more players from the SEC typically in the NFL on current rosters and getting drafted than any other conference. Now, that doesn't mean there are a bunch of them aren't coming in from the Pac-12
right.
or the ACC or the Big Ten. There are, but the SEC is, you know, consistently now. I understand Ohio State won the championship, but it's not like the SEC isn't putting a bunch of teams in the top 10. It's not like there's not a lot of good players in there. And when there are a lot of good players, you feel like Amari Cooper may be tested more than Kevin White is, for instance, or Devontae Parker is at Louisville with the matchups that he had. So,
sure.
Hey. You know what? Call it what you will. I don't think Dave Caldwell's caught up in any conference snobbery. He'll pick them from wherever they come from. He'll pick them from UCF, Tony, I'm told. I'm not making a case for Breshad Perryman. I'm making a case for last year.
Yeah, I've seen him take guys from UCF.
It's happened. It could happen again at some point. You just never know. I saw him take a couple, didn't he, Storm Johnson? We're looking at you, pal. All right, so with that, we wrap it up. I guess no Luke Jokel today. We'll continue to endeavor to have him sit down with us in studio and break John Osher's heart, because we'll get all the good stuff out of Jokel that he didn't get in his Jaguars.com column. You can go to Jaguars.com, download the podcast of the show. You can go to 1010XL, listen on demand, and I'm sure they'll cut out the Gus Bradley interview. Apparently some issues with the stream during the time Gus was in studio. We appreciate him today.